Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, it's Mark Ross, and I'd like to welcome you to another night of Spiritual Connections Radio. As you know, we're on the first Monday of each month, and I'm so excited to have everybody tune in. We've been getting so much great feedback from people about the show. And, you know, I was kind of talking to our guest and everything a little bit before we started the show with the fact that me and Pam, hello Pam.
Hi Mark, welcome everyone to the show.
Yeah, I was talking about the fact that I think we're up to almost 1,700 shows, and how you and I had started the show, I think, a little bit over 2 years, more than 2 years ago, and it's
two
just
and a
amazing.
Half, almost.
Yeah, so I've been really excited about that, and we, as you know, everybody's used to the song that we normally have on at the beginning, but we have a friend of mine, Mike Schneider, who's actually designing a song for our show, and we'll be happy to play that on our next show in March. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and let Pam introduce our guest.
Great. Welcome again, as I said, everyone, and thanks for tuning in tonight, or whenever you're tuning in, since this is Blog Talk. My name is Pam Latour, and I am the co-host of Spiritual Connection Show. Tonight, we have a wonderful guest. Her name is Sandra Ray. She is known the world over as one of the most dynamic spiritual leaders of our day. She's recognized by many as a spiritual teacher, author, rebirther, lecturer, and healer. And we're going to be talking a lot about those things with her tonight. She's written 18 books on the subjects of rebirthing, relationships, ideal birth, forgiveness diet, which I want to hear about, the A Course in Miracles, healing and holiness, and the many mental and spiritual imperatives of life. So without any more hesitation, let's bring in Sandra Ray. Sandra, are you there?
Yes, I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, thank you for being on the show. We were kind of telling a little bit of a story before we got started that I had found out about you through one of your promoters because you were doing different events in Tampa a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it took quite a while to actually, between our people and my people, to get the logistics drained out to get you scheduled. And here we are. So we're really excited to have you on this evening. So
thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. And let me go ahead and give out a couple websites before we get started here. So for everybody who's listening to the show, you can find out more about our guest and the links and everything and more about Pamela and everybody by going to our website, which is spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And you can also go to www.sondraray.com. to find out more about the work that Sandra is doing. So with that, go ahead, Pam.
Well, let's start by finding out a little bit about you, Sandra. Tell our audience, if you would, how you got started in this spiritual work. And there's a little bit here in your bio about President Kennedy. I want to find out all about that. Let's go back to the very beginning.
Okay, fine. I joined the Peace Corps when Kennedy was alive, and so I was in the first 10 groups that went out. And that was kind of my boot camp for world service. And the only horrible thing was that when we landed in Peru, that the pilot announced that Kennedy had just been shot. So it was really horrible. But anyway, I was in the Peace Corps a couple years, and as I say, it was a wonderful start for international service. That's where I got into international service, you know. And then later on, I got divorced and I was looking for help. I was actually losing my hair and I almost went bald. And so I was praying for miracles, and I got called by a mystical experience to California. And I didn't really know anyone there, but I ended up meeting the founder of Rebirthing at that time, and I was one of the first people that he experimented on. So I've always been a pioneer like that. So I was at the very beginning of Rebirthing, which was a real honor for me. And then I started studying birth trauma and how it affects relationships. I can hear my echo. Is that okay with you guys? Do you hear an echo?
I don't hear it anymore. I did in the beginning,
okay.
But I think
I
can
hear my voice. I can hear my voice echoing. But anyway, so I did some research on how your birth affects your relationships.
Shondra,
I'm hearing everything I'm saying.
Yeah, double. Are you close to the computer?
Correct. Is that okay? Everything I'm saying, I'm hearing it come back to me, so I don't know.
Is it
coming out that way?
Are you close to the computer?
Maybe. Too close, huh? I'll try that.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. All right. I think that helped.
I think that's
wow.
better. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, so anyway, I was saying that I started doing research on how a person's birth affects their relationships, and that became very fascinating to me, and no one else was really doing that. And I was able to do that because during rebirthing session, which is a breathing session, people would have memories of their birth. And then I was able to notice how that was affecting their relationships, because they'd tell me all their problems in relationships. And then I made the connection of how a person's birth affects their relationships. And I started writing books on that. And that's how I became well-known, because nobody else was really doing that research. And it continues to be very fascinating to me. So that was the beginning, and I was a rebirther for many years. And then when I joined with my husband, Mark, we started making it more spiritual by doing prayers to the Divine Mother during the session, at the end of the session, and then a mantra that's very deep. And so this made it all more powerful, and our guidance was to call it Liberation Breathing. So we did write a book, Liberation Breathing, the Divine Mother's Gift, which is a new expression of rebirthing, really. It's still the rebirthing breath, but it's a new expression of rebirthing. It's more deep and more spiritual. And then now we have written a book on relationships called, Spiritual Partnership. Spiritual Intimacy is actually the title. So I'm married now, and we work together. We travel all over the world. Does that answer your question?
That does. That's beautiful. That was a beautiful answer. Tell me about the spiritual intimacy. If you were to sum up in a few words, what is the foundation of spiritual intimacy? What would you say it was? And I'm not limiting you to a few words, but it. You
oh,
know,
okay. Yeah. Well, I started, noticing that my clients, when they came, they kept telling me that their relationships were boring and they were bored and they didn't, and then they got so excited when we did this liberation breathing, and they wanted to share their spiritual changes with their mate, and their mate was not interested. So some of them just left their marriages because they were craving what I called spiritual intimacy. In other words, they were craving in their relationship the ability to communicate spiritual growth with your mate, and hopefully your mate would be doing the same and sharing back with you. That's what everybody seemed to want. So I called that spiritual intimacy. And I've over and over again, I found that that's what is missing in a lot of relationships, is that people want to share their spiritual practices. Like my husband and I do our spiritual practices together every morning, and it's so wonderful to be able to do that. And we share all our spiritual growth together, and we're both rebirthers, and we're both authors, so it's easy. But even if you have a different career, this is how you could become more intimate with your mate, is to share your spiritual growth. And of course, if your mate is not on the same spiritual path, it's a bit hard. It's easier if you're both on the same spiritual path, right? So that's kind of where I got the idea for the book. And we're talking about a spiritual partnership, which is what I learned from Gary Zutkoff, that term. And I really like that term, spiritual partnership. It's where you're together for the evolution of your souls. And you both know that, and that's your top priority. And you actually help each other evolve. So my husband calls me his ascension buddy. So we
that's
laugh
nice.
About that. Yeah, but we try to help each other ascend to a higher frequency. And it is very intimate to share your spiritual life with your mate, and it feels good, and it's it's rewarding and it's very nourishing and it's very it gives you ultimate fulfillment, really, in my opinion.
If you were to give someone advice that came to you, for example, and let's use your example of, oh, well, my relationship is boring and maybe my husband doesn't understand my spiritual practice, is there any advice you could give them to help?
Yeah, well, definitely we would try to find out, you know, if the husband could become interested in the work. And, you know, I would certainly want to encourage the husband to try it, you know, before he gives up. Before he gives up on the, you know, we try to coach the woman how she can help her husband open up to this, you know. And she goes home and says, look, this is all the benefit I'm getting, and I want you to try it. Now, if he comes just to please her, it's not going to work, you know. He has to come because he wants the changes in himself, too. So we have
right.
to explain that, you know. And then we also explain that if one person in a marriage is really going for it, evolving and raising their frequency, and the other one isn't, there can become such a big difference that they aren't on the same page. And they aren't even on the same elevator. I call it the different elevator syndrome, you know. So the person that comes first has to explain that to the mate. Look, if I continue doing this and you don't, we'll just get farther and farther apart. Is that what you want, you know? So you have to talk it all through. And you have to talk about, we tell people, talk about the purpose of life. What's your purpose in this life? You know, is your purpose to become enlightened? And if it isn't, well, maybe they're just not meant to be together, you know. But sometimes the man will come because he sees his wife changing so much and it's improving their life, you know. But, of course, the most wonderful thing is if they're both willing to do the spiritual practice together, obviously. That's the ideal.
I get it. I'm thinking about levels of respect. Even if both people are not involved in the same practice, and there's a level of respect and willingness to let the other person be who they are and move toward wherever they want to move toward, I think my feeling is that even if that's not a case where they're both moving on exactly the same path, as long as the path is similar enough, you know, I think all paths lead to the same end is my point.
Right. I mean, it can work. It can definitely work. If, you know, if they have different spiritual paths, they can still share that with each other intimately. Obviously, you know, where it's difficult is if one's on is on any spiritual path and the other is on none. That's where it becomes difficult. You know, but respecting your partner's spiritual path, if it's different, of course, is the important thing. Right.
So, yeah, absolutely true. Mark, do you have a question?
Well, it's such an interesting topic for me because, you know, after many years of being on my spiritual journey and being in and out of all different types of relationships, for the first time in my life, I'm actually in a relationship with somebody that I consider to be my spiritual partner. And
oh, that's great.
Yeah, and it's a lot of like what you talked about for both of you. It's, you know, from your point of view, Sandra, he was talking about, you know, doing our practices together, the fact that we get up at the same time each day so we can sit in meditation, that we do yoga together, that we, you know, that we're interested in studying and in leading and co-teaching with each other, and that there is this, for the first time in my life, this feeling of somebody in my life that is a true equal spiritually.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful?
Versus someone,
yeah, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
wonderful.
I also think, and also what you said, Pam, about having that mutual respect, the fact that, you know, I hold unconditional love for her and that I'm in that space where there is just so much respect for who she is, what she says, and, you know, not trying to make myself right in different situations and, you know, all the different things we learn from different relationships.
Right, yeah. Yeah, we have a technique for conflict resolution where you have to you know, both drop your position. This is the first step. You both drop your position. You both drop the need to be right. And then you go for solution. And the solution is called the highest thought game, where you try to figure out what's the highest spiritual thought you can come up with for the solution. Now, the highest spiritual thought would be the most loving thought you could come up with, the most peaceful, the most positive, and the most productive, and it feels the best in your body. So you keep bouncing thoughts back and forth till you can get to the highest thought. Like if my husband gets the highest thought, I gladly go up to his thought. If I get the highest thought, he gladly goes up to my thought. And then we don't have any arguments. And if we cannot figure out the highest thought, then we would meditate till we could reach it, you know. And we don't care if a child could channel the highest thought in the family. You know, it could be anybody could channel the highest thought. But you always go for the highest thought, and then you drop your position and you drop. You don't need to argue if you play this game. And I learned this technique from my guru, Babaji. So it's a fantastic way of solving conflicts.
Can you give us an idea, because I really love the way that came out, and I'm just wondering, can you give us an example?
Okay, well, let's give a real simple example, like maybe couples fight about, you know, crazy things. Sometimes they fight about what they're going to do for the evening, you know. Let's say one wants to go bowling and the other one wants to go to the movies, and they both want to be, they both are adamant about their position. They could have a fight about that, which is ridiculous. So they could say, okay, what are some of the other options, the higher thoughts? We could go bowling together tonight and the movies together tomorrow night. That would be another, that would be a possible solution. Or we could go to the theater and just do something else completely. Or we could stay home and make love. We could, you know, you come up with all these different possible solutions, and then you pick the one that feels the best in your body, you know, that you both can agree on. And that's just a simple example. But, I mean, you know, people fight about crazy things, you know, which brand of orange juice to buy, they fight about. And the problem is people are addicted. You know, the ego is addicted to conflict. You know, if you study The Course in Miracles, which we do, you find out that your ego is always trying to create a fight and a conflict. So you have to give up this addiction to fighting. And basically what I'm seeing is people are very attached to their anger. So I'm always going around the world trying to get people to get off their anger and so they can have a decent communication. But I notice that people are very attached to their anger. They get angry when I try to get them off their anger. But, you know, I do help people learn to live without anger, and that's one of my passions is to, when I'm teaching relationships, is to help people drop their anger, and I mean permanently drop it, you know, which is possible.
So, you know, besides sharing spiritual practice, is there a couple other quick things you'd like to share about how you can be successful in a spiritual partnership?
I didn't get the... How, what? I didn't hear you.
I said, can you give some other examples of how you can be in a spiritual partnership besides share that practice?
Oh, okay. Well, you can assist each other with changing your thoughts. Now, like if I catch my husband with a negative thought, I would say to him, are you willing to have a higher thought? In other words, you help each other raise your level of consciousness and keep reaching for a higher thought, you know, and you help your mate change their thoughts when you, so you don't let them indulge in a negative ego-based thought. So every time you go to a higher thought, a positive thought, you get a spiritual energy coming in. So even just observing the quality of your thoughts is a spiritual practice. I mean, there's all kinds of spiritual practices, you know, meditation, reading the Course in Miracles together, doing mantras on your mala beads, doing prayers, you know, all these things. But there's a simple thing that couples can do to raise the consciousness in the relationship, and that's help each other raise the quality of their thoughts. And it's a daily discipline that you keep observing your thought, and if you have a negative thought, you give it up and go for a higher thought. and you help your mate remember to do this. So that's a simple one, but everybody gets kind of stuck indulging in their negativity, and you have to kind of have an agreement in your relationship not to do that. In fact, when Mark came into my life, I had been praying for a relationship with deep ease. That was my idea of a good relationship, if I could create a relationship of deep ease. So I meditated on that for a whole year before he came. Then when he came, he said, let's make an agreement to have a conflict-free relationship. And I said, oh, that is exactly what I have been praying for. So that was our first agreement. So we always go back to that, hey, we agreed not to have conflicts. So that agreement was a big decision we both made together. And that's a spiritual practice, to agree not to indulge in conflicts, to agree to give up anger, to agree to go for the highest thought. These are all spiritual things. And the more you choose a life-enhancing thing, a life-enhancing thought, that's a spiritual thing. Going for more life, you know, that's a spiritual thing.
It's funny because that's exactly how I brought my spiritual partner in, was through prayer.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I call that the cosmic dating service. I teach people the cosmic dating service. They don't have to go online. They just have to say the right prayer and ask God for the right person, you know. And it's good to ask for your equal, you know. You don't want someone you can dominate and control, or someone who dominates and controls you, obviously. So I call it the cosmic dating service. It's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I like that. Copyright pending.
Yeah. So I teach the cosmic dating service.
Okay.
Hello?
Can I change? Yeah, I'm here. Can I change the subject for just a minute? Of relationships, and this is not completely off relationships, because everything is related to relationships.
Right. Everything's a relationship.
That's right. But there is something here that I'm reading that says, the only diet there is. Sondra shows people how to lose weight by forgiving people, especially themselves. Now, I thought that was an amazing statement, and I want to hear more about that. Can you elaborate a little bit?
Yeah, I had a women's group once, and they were all complaining about being overweight, and when I processed them, what I found that was a common thing was they were all angry at their fathers, you know, and they hadn't forgiven their fathers. And so I said to them, you know, I think you're holding this anger as part of your weight problem. So, you know, in the Bible, Jesus said you should forgive 70 times 7. And it took me a long time to find out why he said that. I think it was because he was a numerologist also. He was a great metaphysician, but in numerology, 70 times 7 is 490 means completion, I found out later. So I said to these women, let's all, and myself included, do this forgiveness diet. We'll write, I forgive my father completely 70 times a day for 7 days. That's 70 times 7, right? And we all did it. Everybody lost weight without changing the diet, without giving up food. Isn't that interesting? So I was like amazed at this. So then I came up with this forgiveness diet, which I assigned to people all over. You know, I'm traveling and I say, okay, to my students, what's the forgiveness test on your father? 0 to 10. 10 is total complete forgiveness. 0 is none. 5 is half. What number do you get on your father? And they get very low scores, like 5, 4. And what number do you get on your mother? And what number do you get on your sibling? And what number do you get on your ex? And what number do you get on your current partner? And what number do you get on yourself? And they get very low scores. And it's shocking. And so then I tell them, look, you know, if you're not on 10 on all of these, you're stuck and you're still angry. And then I go over the consequences of anger, which is pretty severe. So that's the forgiveness diet. And it's been really marvelous, the results people have gotten when they do it. Like I say, okay, 1 week you do your father, next week you do your mother, and then you do yourself 1 week, you know. And they, after they do this, they get so many changes in their life. So many things clear up, you know. And when you forgive everybody, then you get happy because, you know, the Course in Miracles says forgiveness is the key to happiness. So people have had amazing results doing this. So that's the forgiveness diet.
That's fascinating. Now, what you said was you forgive your father, as an example, we're using the father, 70 times a day for 7 days. So
right, you're right. I forgive my father. You write the affirmation, I forgive my father completely 70 times a day for 7 days. You could do 35 in the morning and 35 in the evening, but you've got to do 70 a day, and you can't do it on the computer, and you need to write it out, you know, longhand.
Wow, I'm going to try this.
Yeah, and it just... I'm telling you, people have had amazing results doing this, and, you know... When you forgive everybody, then you don't set up your mate to be your angry father or your, you know. I think what happens in relationships in the old paradigm is people are always setting up their mate to be one of their parents. And then all their anger they had at their parents, they're dumping on their mate. And it really ruins their relationship. It's a pattern. You know, it's one of the big patterns is resentment and, you know, dumping the resentment you have toward your parents onto your mate and not even consciously realizing you're doing that. Of course, you know, you're never upset for the reason you think. It's usually something from the past that you're upset about. So I've found that when you forgive everybody, your relationships really sparkle and clear up a lot. So I'm always giving this assignment to people. And, of course, it's a way to drop your anger is through forgiveness.
Well, I think that's wise. And oftentimes,
yeah,
when we think we forgave someone, we think
mm-hmm.
we did.
Yeah.
Something will come up that still has that root of unforgiveness, and we don't even see it.
Right. Well, I've had people that, you know, they got to 10 on their father or mother, and then they went home for Christmas. Then they got totally activated again, and they went down to 8. So they had to go back and do it again, you know. They didn't stay at 10.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've got to constantly check. Am I at 10 all the time, or am I slipping? Am I slipping back down to 8 or 6? You know, I've had people always say, okay, what's the forgiveness level on your ex? -2, below the chart, you know. And, you know, a lot of people get scores of 3 and 4, very low. So it's amazing this, and then I try to tell them if you get these low scores, it means you're really angry.
Yeah, I would think that you'd want to put yourself on there as the number one person to forgive.
Yeah, and you could start the first week on yourself, you know. Yeah, people get low scores on themselves, so they're still, you know, they're guilty about something and they haven't cleared their guilt, and, you know, that's bad because guilt always demands punishment. So if they're getting a low score on themselves on the forgiveness test, that probably means they're still guilty about something. And then guilt demands punishment. So then they're going to be unconsciously drawing some kind of punishment to themselves, like, you know, screwing up things, making things not work, or getting sick is one of the biggest punishments, of course. So that's the problem with having guilt, is you keep punishing yourself for the guilt. Okay? Are you there?
I'm sorry. I shut my mic off.
I got myself muted.
And I forgot.
Yeah, we both muted.
Well, what happened?
Sorry. We left you alone on the air.
Yeah, that was an interesting experience. Did you hear what I said or not?
Yes, we
did hear you.
Oh, okay.
We just were commenting. Actually, I was commenting, but I was muted.
Oh, okay.
So,
that's funny.
You know, when you talk about this area of forgiveness and everything, what is your thoughts as it relates to the inner child?
To the inner child. Well, you know, you have to forgive your inner child because, you know, you have to love your inner child. So there's actually a process I do where you go inside and just forgive everything and love your inner child, you know, and see your inner child as perfect as God created you. Like, God created me perfect, God created me whole. And the inner child needs to be nurtured, because sometimes it was traumatized, you know. So I think that it's good to do a nurturing of your inner child frequently, too. And so many people were damaged as children. So they have to go ahead and consciously love their inner child. And, the inner child is, when you think about God creating us perfectly, God creating us worthy, a lot of people have thoughts like, I'm not worthy, I'm bad, I'm wrong, I can't make it. And in our work in liberation breathing, we call it a personal lie. A personal lie is your most dominant negative consciousness factory, and it's often a pre-verbal thought. It goes way back. Could be formed in the womb, or it could be formed right at birth, or it could be dragged in from a past life. So we're looking for a thought that's really deep, that's a negative judgment you have about yourself. And everybody has, one dominant one. We have, many people have several, but everybody has one dominant one, and we call it a personal lie. And it's the main thing in our work that we have to find out what the person has. Like, I have collected about 300 of personal lies now, and they're common. Like, they're like, I'm bad, I'm wrong. Say if they were the wrong sex at birth, they might have a thought, I'm a disappointment, I'm bad, I'm wrong, I can't make it, I'm weak, I'm a failure. All these thoughts are down there in the subconscious. That's the tricky part, and they sabotage your life. So in liberation breathing, we've trained ourselves to go after that thought and locate the worst thought a person has about themselves. That's one of the first things we do when we start a client, is we try to find out what their personal lie is. And, people have a lot of negative thoughts about themselves, and some of them are just suppressed, and they're not aware that they have this thought. But it's so liberating to find out that core belief that's negative that one has. And when you drag that up and breathe it out of yourselves, it changes everything, and that's why we call it liberation breathing, because it's just so liberating when you get that thought out of there. And in relationships, you can have your personal lives clashing. Like, I had a couple I was working with, and his thought was, I'm bad. And her thought was, I'm wrong. She was the wrong sex. And he thought he was bad because he hurt his mother at birth, because he was a big baby. So they got married, and I'm wrong, married, I'm bad, right? So in the marriage, he kept telling her, you're wrong. Well, that was her thought about herself and her subconscious. Then he would verbally abuse her, and then he'd feel bad. And then that was his thought. And this whole thing escalated, these two thoughts, till one day he actually hit her. And then he felt really bad, and she felt really wrong. And anyway, so she finally got out of that marriage, and I said to her, you better change that thought, I'm wrong, or you'll just get in another marriage or another relationship, and the same thing will happen, But then I lost track of her for 4 years, and 4 years later, there's a knock at my door, and she said to me, I was so shocked to see her. He said, well, you told me 4 years ago what my case was, but I didn't get it. She said, then I realized, I went to India, and I told Babaji I'd give up all my addictions, she said. And she realized her biggest addiction was to the thought, I'm wrong. So that's interesting research, too.
I don't, because I don't know that much about the breathing process, but is it something that you could kind of step us through as an example on the air for everybody?
Right, okay. So we breathe in the upper chest. We don't breathe in the belly. That's yoga breathing, which is a different purpose. The reason we breathe in the upper chest is most people have shallow breathing because when they were born, the doctor cut the cord too fast. And they were choking on their amniotic fluid, and they might have been hung upside down to clear it and spanked. So their first breath was associated with pain. So this creates them having this memory of pain wired up with breathing. So most people are subventilating. They're not really breathing fully and freely. So one of the purposes of breath work is to heal the damage done to the breath mechanism at birth. And we train people to learn to breathe fully and freely in the upper chest and release these memories of birth trauma. So birth is one thing that comes up when we do this breathing. Past lives could come up. Trauma as a child you can release. And, you know, you can heal things in your body because any condition in your body starts with a thought, like any illness or any pain. In fact, all pain is the effort involved in clinging to a negative thought. So we would help clients breathe out the thought that causes their pain, breathe out the thought that causes their illness, breathe out the thought that causes their overweight, or breathe out the thought that whatever the trauma they had, what thoughts they formed. So it's releasing these thoughts from the cells, and it feels really good. We have them breathe for an hour. You know, they lie down on the bed or a mat with their clothes on and breathe for a full hour. The last 15 minutes, we do the prayers to the Divine Mother, which makes it really much deeper. And then we have them turn on their side and switch from oral breathing to nasal breathing, and we do a mantra that's very powerful in Sanskrit for them for completion. So that's kind of a typical session. It's a dry rebirthing. And then we also have wet breathing, where we go in the water with warm water with a snorkel and a nose plug, and you roll up in the fetal position and breathe. And that's really powerful. So I really like wet breath work very much. And we actually take people to Iceland, to the Blue Lagoon, and breathe in the thermal springs there too. So that's dry rebirthing and wet rebirthing, which we now call liberation breathing.
Okay, thank you for going over that. Go ahead, Pam.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Mark, I was going to ask you if you wanted to do the half an hour break.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Let's just do a quick intro.
Okay.
Let's see. Hold on for 1 second. Sandra, can you go ahead and give out your website and just talk about anything you want to promote as far as this month?
Oh, okay, sure. SandraRay.com is my website. And we have a new book out called Liberation Breathing, The Divine Mother's Gift. And it also contains knowledge of physical immortality in that book. So it's a very deep book, very profound. Talks about different types of births, how they affect you. Talks about liberation breathing, what it does for you, and, you know, how you can heal yourself. And then we just got accepted by a publisher in New York for our new book called Spiritual Intimacy. Now, that one has just been accepted, so obviously it's not done yet. It's not out yet. But Liberation Breathing, The Divine Mother's Gift, is on Amazon.com. Mm. And
well,
we are available to do sessions by Skype. We can do... you know, if you wanted a session, we could do by Skype, and it works really well. At first, I thought, oh, how are we going to do that? But people call us from all over the world, and the Skype is so good now. They lie down, and we coach them. So we can actually do Skype sessions, which really makes it nice.
And let me go ahead and just give out the website to everybody. For everybody who's listening to the show, I just want to let you know, if you want to find out more about this show and other shows, you can go to our website, which is www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. I have to ask, I know it's a new book and it's still in the works and all that, but give us a little tidbit. What's this new book that you were just talking about that's coming out?
Oh, Spiritual Intimacy, right. Well, this is about what we were saying, you know, having a relationship that's spiritual and that you are together, having a spiritual partnership where you're together for the evolution of your souls. And it's the new paradigm. I mean, you really have to let go of the way your parents did it. You have to throw out your parents' model for relationships because it doesn't really work for now. And, you know, our parents were in the old paradigm, and the old paradigm has a lot of domination, control, manipulation, fighting, and so on. So the new paradigm is called the holy relationship. The holy relationship is totally different than the unholy relationship. And the Course in Miracles actually defines the difference between an unholy relationship and a holy relationship. And they say an unholy relationship is where you think you're lacking something in yourself and you need to find someone else to complete you. Then you get together with them, then you rip them off, and then you leave. So that's what they call an unholy relationship. Now, a holy relationship, which is the new paradigm, of course, is the paradigm of joy. A holy relationship starts from a totally different premise. Each person looks within himself and herself, and they find no lack. They feel complete. I'm complete. I don't need anybody. I am satisfied being alone, and I am fine, and I'm happy. Then I find someone else who is complete, and they don't need me, and I don't need them. And we come together and share the light with the world. That's what they call a holy relationship in the Course in Miracles. And definitely that's the new paradigm that we're teaching in this book, spiritual intimacy. So it's nothing to do with what our parents did. You really have to kind of throw that out the window, the way your parents did it.
Yeah, I find in my current relationship or partnership that the most important thing that both of us had in common is that we both understood that we had to love ourselves first.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you've got to start with self-love. I mean, self-esteem is one of the most important ingredients, you know. You've got to love yourself. And then when you love yourself, you will give someone else the opportunity to love you because you'll know that you deserve it. You know, if you hate yourself or you don't like yourself, then how can anybody else love you? And if they start loving you, you'll think you won't deserve it and you'll push them away. So you're absolutely right. Self-love is the first thing. Self-esteem is the first thing. And you got to start with that. And you have to become happy all by yourself. You know, I always tell people never marry someone who's unhappy. It's a recipe for disaster. Some people think, oh, well, you know, they'll change when they get married. It doesn't work like that because marriage is so intense. It brings up everything more strongly, you know. So things get accentuated in marriage. So if you hate yourself, it's going to get worse.
Well, let me ask one more question before I turn this back over to Pam. How does physical intimacy work into the spiritual intimacy?
Oh, okay. Well, sexual life, we try to turn it over and make that a sacred experience too. You know, it's like offering your sex life up to the Holy Spirit and trying to be in the Holy Spirit's mind instead of the ego's mind. So then I have to explain what that is. If you're in the ego's thought system, you think you're separate from God and separate from everyone else, and then you're going to have a lot of guilt, and you're going to have a lot of fear, and then you're going to have pain, you're going to have misery, and it's going to go downhill from then. The ego's thought system is all your negative thoughts that keep you from remembering you're one with God. And the Holy Spirit's thought system is our true reality, where we are one with God. There is no separation. Therefore, there is no sin. There is no punishment. And you're in a state of joy, and you're in a state of more life. And so as far as sex goes, you have to know, are you in the ego's thought system with it, or are you in the Holy Spirit's thought system? If you're in the Holy Spirit's thought system, it's a sacred experience. So it depends on where your mind is at, really. And then, you know, that's why people have a lot of problems with sex, because they don't have their mind in the right place. They don't have... Yes?
Yes?
Oh, okay. I was going to say, go ahead, Pam.
Okay. Well, I'd like to hear the end of that statement. You said that's why people have problems with sex, because they have their mind in the wrong place, and then you started saying something else. Do you remember what you were going to say?
Oh, okay. Well, the body responds. You know, the mind rules the body, you know? So if your mind's all negative, then your body can't really relax. You know what I'm saying? And so it's going to be a negative experience sexually, I think, you know. And if your mind is in the spiritual consciousness and your mind is in the Holy Spirit's thought system, it's going to be a sacred, wonderful experience. But, you know, a lot of people, they're having sex and their mind is screwed up. They're thinking negative thoughts, or maybe they're not even thinking present time thoughts. They're thinking about, did I take the garbage out? Are the kids okay? Did I let the dog out? And they're having these kind of thoughts during sex, so they wonder why it's not working, because they're not even present, you know. So you have to be in present time, and you have to have the right thoughts. And it helps to have the right ambience. You know, I have altars in all my rooms, and I have a beautiful altars and beautiful sacred art in my bedroom. And I think that always helps, you know, to have altars and things. And so it's not absolutely necessary, but it certainly helps make it more sacred, in my opinion.
That's
and then,
really
you know,
nice.
I like to play beautiful music, and there's some Indian classical music that is just wonderful for lovemaking. You know, it's just very high spiritually. So there, all those things help.
That's wonderful. I do have a question. You know, you seem to me to be a very practical person. You're very down to earth. You're very grounded, with some beautiful, clear, wise views of life. And
oh,
I love
that
about you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, I was born in a little town in Iowa, population 300. That's how simple my background was, you know. So I think you get real practical when you're born in Iowa in little towns like that. And, you know, everybody knew everybody, and I knew everybody, and everybody knew me. And so I was used to being known. But the farmers that I grew up with were very simple, holy people, you know. So I think that's my roots are very practical that way, you know. And then I have had the privilege of studying with great spiritual masters. You know, my Babaji happens to be my guru, and he's the hero of the book Autobiography of a Yogi by Yogananda. It talks about Babaji in chapter 33 and 34. And he's an avatar, which means he actually materialized his body. He was not born of a woman. So he's like the guru of the gurus. So I had the extreme privilege of actually being with him, you know, several times. And he is my guiding light. And then, of course, I have Jesus in the Course in Miracles. And then I have the Divine Mother and Amaji. So I call them the dream team, you know, Amaji, Babaji, and Jesus. So they help me be wise with these things, you know. But, yeah, I have a simple upbringing. And then I had the privilege of being with these masters. So it's been such a blessing for me.
That's really lovely. You know, one of the things that I find in relationships, if we can go back to that for just a minute.
Right.
One of the things I find in relationships that's fascinating is that when two people live together and when they see each other regularly and when they are upset about the world, even if they're not upset with each other, and they're looking at each other and they're being upset and they're looking at each other and they're being upset, they develop patterns between themselves as to when you look at the other person, you automatically feel a certain way, and it's that feeling is often below your awareness level as to why you're feeling that way. Mm-hmm. Can you give us, first of all, do you agree
mean
with
you,
that?
In other words, you're picking up on your mate's discomfort and taking it on? Is that what you mean?
Well, I mean, like if you're upset it's with someone else at work, and you're coming home and you're looking at your spouse and you're explaining this upset to them, and you're really feeling the anger, but you're not angry at them.
Yeah.
And this happens several times, and you're looking at their face and you're feeling the anger, your body will make the connection between the anger and their face, even though you were never really mad at them. So after a while, these patterns begin developing, and pretty soon you're resisting one another, even though you're not even sure why. Can you give us anything to help break through that?
Well, you know, there's a new cause of divorce now. It's called, let me think what the name of it is. When I can describe it. A guy comes home from, he's driving on the freeway, right? And he's very stressed out in the freeway traffic. And he had a rough day, like you say, at work. And comes home all charged up. And then he kind of dumps it on his mate, all that bad energy, you know. And,
that's what I'm talking about, right.
Yeah, and that doesn't work. You know, the mate has to say, look, go and don't dump it on me. Go out and take a shower and then, you know, and run around the block or do something. And, you know, the mate shouldn't really allow that to be dumped on, because otherwise then they're both down, you know. So you got to be careful. It's you know, projecting all your stuff onto your mate. That's happens really easily. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I know that's Oh, I wish I could think of the name of that pattern. But, you know, that is a common thing going on now where you dump all your stress onto your mate. Yes, that's a problem. you want to try not to do that or dump it on the kids, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's talk about the way that you see the future. Now, I know that you can't predict the future, and no one can. But from the pragmatic and very down-to-earth position that you're that you seem to hold, but also very wise, as I said, I've heard a lot of things about what people think are going to happen in the near future. Do you have any predictions?
Yeah, you know, the thing about making predictions is then they come true. So you want to be careful. I try not to indulge in negative predictions because what you think about is what you get. So I try to be positive, and I'm always hoping that more and more people will get enlightened, and it'll be the 100th monkey syndrome. When we get enough people enlightened, it will telepathically and be communicated to others. That's my vision and my hope, you know. If I start thinking about all this negativity and ISIS and all that, then I can go crazy. One has to be careful how much TV one watches, for example, because TV is very third dimensional. It's in the low dimensions. And you can get very addicted to TV and go into a low frequency. So you have to be careful. We don't even have TV for that reason because I don't want to be programmed. I do read the headlines on the Huffington Post, so I know what's going on. But if I watch TV, you take that in. You got to be careful, you know, how much TV you watch. So if you watch a lot of TV, you're going to think that it's really bad out there, and you're going to start getting indulging in that negativity, and then it attracts more negativity. So my prayer is that enough people will get enlightened that it will telepathically spread across the world somehow. So that's my thought about it.
I like that. You know, you mentioned in this write-up that I've got in front of me, there's something that says, our quest to lovingly integrate ourselves in these modern times. Give me an example of how you would lovingly integrate yourself.
Myself into the modern times? Well, I've always kind of been on the leading edge. I'm a visionary, and I feel like I need to keep the vision. And one of the visions I have is even physical immortality. Now, that's pretty outrageous. You talk about integrating yourself with that idea into the community, it's quite a stretch for people. But I am willing to do it. Even there's very few women that I know that are speaking about physical immortality as a goal. And all I know is that when you start looking into that topic and start learning what that means, your whole life improves. And then you can be a gift to the world. When your life urge is strengthened, you can help other people strengthen their life urge. And it used to be when we would talk about that topic, some people would just get up and leave the room. Now we can talk about it and people are pretty fascinated. Even science is kind of catching up, and they're saying, look, we can live a lot longer than we thought. But if you give up the thought death is inevitable, you give up the thought I'm separate from God, you give up your personal lie, and you keep breathing and ascending, because every liberation breathing session is a form of ascension. You keep ascending to a higher frequency and higher frequency. Well, if you actually got to a certain frequency, you can become like ageless. And you stay in that. It's a different dimension. That's why too much TV is the opposite, you know. It's a different dimension. So when you're in that dimension, then you can help people more. You know, you can go out in the world. Well, I travel all over the world to go to all these different countries. And I try to raise people's consciousness, and that's how I kind of integrate myself into the community. But people that come and study with me, they want to change. So I attract people that want to change. You can't make people change. Some people don't want to change. And, you know, the Course in Miracles says truth cannot deal with errors people want to keep. So some people want to keep their errors. They want to keep their negative thoughts. and no matter what you do, they won't change. So I don't try to integrate myself with those people because they don't want it, you know. So mm-hmm. the way I try to integrate myself is to go where people want this, where people want to change, to go where people are interested in enlightenment, and I try to surround myself with those kind of people. So I try to integrate myself in those circles. And you got to be careful who you hang out with, you know, because some people will try to bring you down and, you know, they want you to match energies to where they're at. And so some of the topics I teach are pretty outrageous, but I find that people are excited. They want something new. They know their old way isn't working. People say there must be another way. You know, there must be another way. Mm-hmm. So we do know other ways now.
Hey, Sandra. Wright.
That's lovely.
Yeah?
Go ahead, Mark.
Can you talk about the daily spiritual practices that you recommend?
Oh, sure. Thank you. Well, what my husband and I do is he studied the Course 17 years, the Course in Miracles. So we try to read the Course in Miracles lesson and we discuss it. And we actually have recordings of that free online in our website. So we record what we say, we discuss it, we read the lesson, and then we discuss it together and we record it for people. So it's on our website for free. And that's one thing we do. And then we have mantras, which are sacred syllables or sacred words that we have received from our gurus. Like I got one from Amaji, one from Babaji, one from a couple other gurus in India. And I do those every morning. And the highest mantra is Om Namah Shivaya. It's the highest thought in the universe. It means I surrender to the God within and infinite spirit, infinite being, and infinite manifestation. So I say Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya on my beads. We have mala beads, which has 108 beads. I try to do 10 rounds of Om Namah Shivaya every morning. And that gets you pretty high. And so then we do prayers on forgiveness, forgiving everybody, and we do prosperity prayers. And sometimes we do a walk where we do our beads while we're walking. Sometimes we meditate, any number of things. But I really like reading the Course in Miracles out loud. And especially my husband has studied it so many years that he's really good at understanding it and explaining it and so on. So those are the practices we do every day. And the thing is, you have to do it. First you take a shower, then you sit down and do it. If you go to the computer, this is from my experience, if I go to the computer, forget it. I'll never get back to my spiritual practice. So I've learned that you have to do the spiritual practice before you do anything else, like opening your computer. No, you can't do that. You have to take a shower, then you do the spiritual practice, and then you open your computer in that order. Otherwise, you can get distracted so easy.
What is your thought about meditation?
Well, my guru Babaji said most people in the West don't have the patience to meditate. So he taught us action, and he calls it karma yoga. I like meditation, but I don't do a regular meditation. And, you know, and he believed that most people in the West don't have time to meditate, or they don't take time to meditate. So instead of that, he called it karma yoga, your work dedicated to God. And he said work is worship. And so karma yoga is service to humanity. And his philosophy was truth, love, simplicity, and service to mankind. That's the formula for happiness. So I don't meditate I did take TM a long time ago, and I do that sometimes, but I don't do it every single day. That's just because my guru was more into the action part of it. But I think it's lovely. I mean, I think it's wonderful. And I've been trying to meditate more. I usually like to lie down. I know they say you shouldn't do that, but I kind of like to meditate lying down myself. Mm. Because then I can do some breathing. Mhm. But I think I need to meditate more myself.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, Mark, I think we're hitting the 9 o'clock mark.
Really? Is it time already? It is, isn't it? Oh my
it
gosh!
Is.
Well, you guys,
really
great.
Really
thank you.
How soon until your next book comes out?
Well, I don't know because we just turned it in, so it depends on publishing. You know, I really don't know. This is
we're definitely going to have you come back and talk about it.
Yeah, and my husband has written a book, 365 Odes to the Divine Mother. He's a poet, and so that book is coming out, too. We self-published that one. It's so beautiful. So that one will be available next. Liberation Breathing is already out, and then Odes to the Divine Mother is going to come out soon. And then the other one on spiritual intimacy, we just turned into the publisher, so it's up to them how long it takes. So keep you posted.
Great.
We'll be waiting
great.
For it.
Okay,
yeah,
thanks so
really
much.
Good. Yeah, go ahead and give
Thank
out your
you
website
so much.
To everybody again.
Okay, SandraRay.com or LiberationBreathing.com, either one.
Thank you
and
so
we can
much
do
for
Skype
being on
sessions.
The show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And it's great having you on.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you. All right, good night,
good
everybody.
Night, Sandra.
You've been listening
good night,
to,
everyone.
You've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. To find out more about this show or other shows, go to our website at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. Good night, everybody.